Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Misty Copeland knows how to dance past obstacles. In 2015, she became the first African-American principal ballerina at the American Ballet Theater. With an atypical ballerina's body, stronger, more muscular, she's challenging norms in classical dance. Now she's talking about her journey from insecure teenager to confident star dancer and tips for finding your own health and happiness. This hour on Point, Misty Copeland on self-acceptance and high achievement. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Do you know Misty Copeland, her power and grace? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. It was a big deal when Misty Copeland rose to the rank of principal dancer in the American Ballet Theater in 2015. So significant, it made national news, as in this CNN report from June of that year.
Misty Copeland, the 32-year-old tour de force ballerina making history, promoted to principal dancer with the storied American Ballet Theater. She is the first African-American woman to achieve this top-ranking honor in the prestigious dance company's 75-year history.
But it wasn't always easy at all. And some of that, if you've seen her in the Under Armour ads. Back in 2014, she became the face of Under Armour's I Will What I Want campaign, showed skilled female athletes wearing the company's athletic apparel. Here's a spot from that year. Misty, then a soloist at the American Ballet Theater, dances while a voiceover overreads a compilation of negative feedback that she received in her early years as a ballerina.
Dear candidate, thank you for your application to our ballet academy. Unfortunately, you have not been accepted. You lack the right feet, Achilles tendons, turnout, torso length, and bust. You have the wrong body for ballet, and at 13, you are too old to be considered.
Ouch. Joining me now from New York is Misty Copeland, principal dancer at the American Ballet Theater. She's about to dance the lead role in Giselle this summer, and she's out with a new book, Ballerina Body, Dancing and Eating Your Way to a Leaner, Stronger, and More Graceful You. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Misty Copeland, welcome to On Point.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
It's just great to have you here. We've admired your work for a long, long time, and it's wonderful to have a chance to talk. Could you take us back? Was that from a real letter that we heard that girl's voice reading under your ad for Under Armour?
Well, the idea for the commercial came from my actual experiences of, you know, being the only one in most situations as a classical dancer, the only black woman. But that actual letter is not one that I received, but it was a real letter that a young dancer of color received. And we just thought it was so powerful and stood for what a lot of minorities experience in the ballet world. And also just it being such a relatable storyline for people in general, you know, being told they're not right, or just coming from situations that make you feel like you can't succeed.
I mean, it's incredible. I don't know. I am not a ballet expert, Misty, but when they wrote to this young woman, you lack the right feet. Like, I mean, I know you were considered to have an atypical ballet body, but did you have the right feet, whatever that means?
This is the interesting thing about my story. You know, starting at 13 years old, that is very late. And I feel if I didn't have the right ballet body at that moment, I wouldn't have succeeded as quickly as I did. I was considered a prodigy. I was on point within 2 months. I did have the ideal body. At the time, I had flexible feet. I had turnout and flexibility in my body and strength. I had the right body proportions. It was once I became a professional that I really started to understand the magnitude of those words that, again, a lot of minority dancers hear, which is you don't have the right body. And I've really deciphered that as you don't have the right skin color. I definitely went through a time where my body was changing and my bust grew and my muscles were bigger than a lot of the dancers next to me. And I'm only 5'2", so that's a lot to take on when you're in such a small package. And it got to a point where I no longer had this perfect ballet body. And so much of the book is about, you know, accepting who you are in the present and discovering how to be your healthiest self and not trying to transform into someone else.
I have to admit, having only seen you, you know, sort of in passing in the media, that to learn that you are 5'2" tall just blew my mind.
Oh,
I mean, you look big and powerful, and you're in a way you're built more like a gymnast, or what I think of as at 5'2" when I see that thing, wonderful muscling. What took you to ballet?
You know, I just kind of stumbled into it. I grew up in, you know, in situations where there's no way I would have found classical dance or classical music. I was in underprivileged communities for most of my childhood and just really struggling to survive. I ended up attending a Boys and Girls Club from, I think, the age of maybe 7 years old. And that's where I found this free ballet class that was being offered. And I was really pushed into taking it. I was extremely shy and introverted and never found anything that was really mine. You know, being one of six children, I was just, you know, stuck between all of these big personalities. And I think I was comfortable there. But it was at my Boys and Girls Club on a basketball court that I took my first ballet class. And the teacher knew immediately. She said, "I could just feel this energy from you," she says, when she touched my feet and could just mold my body into these positions that it takes, you know, years and years of training to do. And 4 years later, I was dancing professionally for American Ballet Theatre.
It's an incredible story, and I want to go to all of that. But take us back. You talked about the underprivileged communities that you had grown up in. I mean, given where you are now, I think it's inspiring for people to hear exactly what that background was. Give us your family story. Like, describe your family to us and the circumstances that you, your parents, your siblings dealt with.
So my mother grew up in Kansas City, Missouri, where she met my father, and she had four children. I was the fourth, the youngest from her first marriage. She left my father and moved to California, Southern California, when I was only 2 years old. And that's where she married her second husband and had the fifth child, my little sister. From the time we got to California, it was really just surviving. We never really had enough money for all of us kids. We most likely were in one-bedroom apartments. By the time my mother married her third husband and had my little brother, making us six kids now, we ended up moving to a small town called San Pedro. And that's really where I spent the bulk of my childhood and where I started training in ballet. Once she divorced her husband, her third husband, it was the hardest time for us. I think I was around 11 or 12 years old. And we were at that point just moving from house to house, staying with friends, sleeping on their floor in their living rooms, staying with, you know, boyfriends of hers that she was seeing at the time. And at the lowest point, we were in a motel, all six of us kids and her in a, you know, one-room motel. And just financially, we were constantly struggling just to have food on the table. So any extracurricular activities or even school, you know, that was not a priority for us. It was, you know, how are we going to eat tomorrow and where are we going to stay?
It's amazing. And now through your effort and your talent, I mean, you swan around the salons of New York City and the world.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure it's not all, you know, golden, but still, it's a pretty rarefied realm that you live and work in now. How do you think about that, gap?
You know, there's not a day that goes by that I don't feel so fortunate. Or that I forget where I've come from. It's just amazing that, you know, when I credit ballet for giving me the opportunity to earn and work hard enough to live the life that I'm living now. It's really spectacular to just to think of, you know, what could have been with me and all of my mm-hmm. siblings. And I'm very proud to say that, you know, not one of us is, you know, on the streets or selling drugs mm-hmm. or have been in prison. And that is a typical path for, you know, children who grew up the way that I did. And it's just incredible that I feel like my mother just always had this inner strength that she instilled in us to survive, not to give up. And I think that's gone a long way in terms of how I've approached my life and my career.
I've seen young people discover that they are gifted athletically or perhaps in dance. I've watched that. And their parents, you know, sometimes you don't know when the kid's little, and then suddenly you see something. Oh my gosh! Look at my daughter or my son do that the other kids aren't doing. Did you have that moment in ballet, or did it come before ballet, where you realized, ooh, my body has capacity that's special?
I don't think I understood it before I went into ballet classes. I spent a lot of time alone. Again, I was such an introvert, and wherever I could find a quiet space away from my siblings and away from the chaos of our household, I was moving and creating and exploring my body in ways, you know, I was always so flexible and could do these crazy things, like with my shoulders are double jointed and my knees are. And
wow.
But I don't think that I thought I was special in any way or that was going to blossom into a career. But once I was in the ballet studio, it became really clear that my ability to mimic movement and for it to stick and stay with me in my body was a strength of mine that I have to this day.
Misty Copeland is with us, prima ballerina for the American Ballet Theater, author of the new book, Ballerina Body, Dancing and Eating Your Way to a Leaner, Stronger, and More Graceful You. Behind us right here, Tchaikovsky's finale swan theme from the ballet Swan Lake, Royal Philharmonic Orchestra here. But Copeland first danced the iconic dual role of Odette and Odile in Swan Lake for the Washington Ballet in 2015, then the American Ballet Theater in 2016. Misty Copeland, please stand by in New York. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we are talking this hour with prima ballerina Misty Copeland about dance, muscles, her path, and the body and mindset that she has honed for her art. She's out with a new book called Ballerina Body, Dancing and Eating Your Way to a Leaner, Stronger, and More Graceful You. And join us this hour. Do you know Misty Copeland, her work? Have you seen her break the mold of the waif-like ballerina, seen her bring her power to the stage? Have you seen her bring ballet to the realm of fitness and athleticism with her Under Armour ads? What's your question for Misty on what it's been like to be the first African-American dancer to scale these ballet heights? In 2015, Misty Copeland received one of Glamour magazine's Women of the Year awards, and one of her mentors, Raven Wilkinson, spoke for a video there. Wilkinson was the first African-American ballerina to join a major dance company, the Ballet Russe de Monte Carlo, in 1955. In the video, she talks about the importance of seeing Misty Copeland dance the starring role in Swan Lake.
I often say to Misty, may I be the wind at your back when you go on the stage tonight?
I was told they could never have a black swan queen.
There I sit in the audience and I see Misty accomplishing this. Yes, it can be accomplished. It can be done.
It can be accomplished. It can be done. From that same short film, here's Misty's done a lot of mentoring with the Boys and Girls Clubs. Here's two young African-American girls talking about why they enjoy spending time with her.
Misty makes me want to feel like I want to be just like her when I grow up. When I dance, I say what I feel.
And here, just last week, Misty Copeland posted a video to her Instagram of her rehearsing for the ballet Giselle. She'll be performing the role of Giselle on May 26th and May 31st at the Metropolitan Opera House in New York. Her new book is Ballerina Body. Misty Copeland joins us from New York. And Misty, we have a lot of calls for you, if I may. Bob in Springfield, Ohio. You're on the air with Misty Copeland in New York.
Hello, how are you?
Hi.
Very well. We're good, Bob.
I just wanted to say... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're on.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to say, first of all, it's an honor to speak to one of my children's idols, basically.
Thank you.
My stepdaughter is she's a ballet dancer. She also does modern and jazz. And from the first moment she ever came across Misty Copeland's name on the internet, was addicted. She was just mesmerized. And she would make us watch YouTube videos about her and tell us all these facts about her. Did you know Misty Copeland was told this? And she still did it, and she made it here, and, you know, just on and on and on. And my stepdaughter herself is flat-footed. She's very short and muscular, you know, not your typical ballet body. And in no time at all has risen to the top of her class. She's the top jumper. She's about to start point. And I think a lot of that has to do with inspiration from Ms. Copeland.
Thank you. It's amazing to hear those stories because in the dance world, it's just been so difficult for people to feel the confidence to succeed if they don't fit this perfect ballet mold. And it's so interesting to have watched some of the most successful dancers in American history. And I feel like they're your daughter. You know, they were told no, and it gives them this fire to push beyond maybe what is even possible physically for them, and they just have something more than someone who's just being given everything and told you are perfect, you have it all. And I think it's so encouraging for the youth to see people like me succeeding who are not perfect in the eyes of the ballet world.
Bob, good luck with all the artistry going on in your home. Let me get one more, if I may. Wendy in Omaha, Nebraska. Wendy, thank you for calling. You're on with Misty Copeland.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, you're on.
Misty, I just want to say that you are such a true inspiration. I've been a dancer my whole life, and what I so admire about you is how many barriers you've broken, even if you had no intention of breaking barriers when you got into dance. But the fact that you are such an athletic person, the fact that you are a woman of color, and as a 30-something dancer myself, I so appreciate that you are continuing to dance into your 30s, because as I'm sure you know, and many professional dancers know, that oftentimes dancers are told that there's kind of an expiration date to their career, particularly women. And so that you are in your 30s, Misty, and continuing to just break through that glass ceiling and have a career through injury and obstacle and all of those things. You're just such a true inspiration to so many girls and women, and I think dancers all over the world. So thank you
thank
for doing
you
that.
So much. I think it's so important, especially this day and age, for Americans to truly understand and appreciate and be educated in the background of classical ballet. I feel like that's kind of what's allowing this art form to, you know, die, as a lot of people say, especially in America. I think that we deserve the recognition that athletes get, and we deserve to be given endorsement deals. And I think it's important for me to have that voice and be in those spaces where I can show that dancers are athletes, and we can look like the world. We should be representing the world in America. It's an art form and it's subjective, and we should be able to transform into whatever it is we want to be.
Wendy, I appreciate your call from Omaha, sort of fellow dancer there. Misty Copeland, take us back. Give us a little education. Not everybody knows ballet, you know, extremely well. Not everyone sees it. I mean, you showing up in these Under Armour ads has put a ballerina in front of a huge audience in a way that's unusual. You talked about the perfect ballet body mold that was traditionally understood. What was that?
You know, the interesting thing is in the classical ballet history, the body is ever evolving. And I don't think that's something that people really acknowledge. Mm-hmm. We get so caught up in kind of this period in pop culture where ballet was so highlighted. And I think that's kind of, you know, at the end of the 60s through the 70s and early 80s. And George Balanchine was such a huge part of that phenomenon. And he kind of coined this ballet image, and it had so much to do with what was happening in pop culture and so many that kind of ideal model Twiggy-esque look, and that became the norm and the ideal for a ballerina. But you know, back in the 1800s, early 1900s, you know, ballerinas were women. They weren't necessarily extremely athletic looking, because I think that the bodies evolved depending on the choreography that you're doing. Mm-hmm. But they were curvaceous and they were soft and they had breasts. And, you know, again, the body evolves in the classical dance world depending on the choreography that you're doing. And nowadays it's so physical and athletic that the body changes with that. And I think that's why a lot of dancers now are much more muscular, because your body has to be able to support, you know, that choreography. Mm-hmm. But it's just, again, important for me to represent and show that we are athletes. And I've been so fortunate to have Under Armour, you know, on board with me and give me that platform to really introduce a lot of Americans to the inside look, you know, behind the curtains mm-hmm. of what it takes.
Does a different body, Misty, mean a different dance? You know, if it's a,
I mean,
does it, you have a powerful physical presence. Does that
right.
change the dance? Maybe it's a chicken mm-hmm. and egg thing. Maybe choreographers are just looking for something more robust and so on. But then when mm-hmm. you dance one of the classical ballets.
Right. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
no, I don't think so. And I think that is something that, has held back so many minority dancers, because they're told, you know, because you look the way you do, you have mm-hmm. the body that you do, you have the skin color that you do, therefore you're not capable of doing the same movement as, you know, these other dancers or what's been done in the past. And, you know, when you're training in the classical technique, everyone's training in the exact same way. And you're developing your body, mm-hmm. You know, in the way that it will naturally develop, you know, with the technique that you're doing. But we're capable of all doing the same type of movement. And I think I look like anyone else when I approach Swan Lake and I'm being coached and I'm doing the same steps, you know, that throughout history has been done. And I don't think that the shape of my body or the color of my skin changes that outcome.
Ronnie, calling from Boston. Hi, Ronnie. You're on the air with Misty Copeland.
Hello. Thank you so much for taking my call. I really appreciate it. Ms. Copeland, I have to tell you this. My wife has somewhat of a similar build as you do. She has very a muscular build, very toned legs, which I absolutely love, by the way.
All right.
Now, her, on the other hand, she seems to struggle a little bit in terms of she's very athletic. She works out a lot. And she worries a lot about what she eats because of the fear of maybe gaining too much muscle, maybe looking mm-hmm. A little bit more muscular than the average female. So I have a two-part question for you, and I hope you can answer it for me. The movie Black Swan, I want to know if you saw it, what you thought of it, and the struggles that the ballet dancers had on there with regard to their diets. Did you, in your career, have to worry about not only being maybe a little bit thinner, but also maybe gaining too much muscle? And what advice would you give somebody who has a similar shape as you do, which is what my wife has?
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. I did see Black Swan, and I actually really enjoyed it for what it is. You know, and I think it's so similar to like classical ballet stories. It's over the top, and it's theatrical, and it's there to entertain you. It's not to replicate life. I have experienced, you know, being told to lose weight, and you know, and it's not that common in the ballet world, you know, where people think that we all have eating disorders and we're all just starving ourselves. Mm. And, you know, when you're an athlete, if you have an eating disorder, there's no way you're going to really survive and thrive. You'll have a very short career. It's, you know, like being an athlete, mm-hmm. if you're not eating and fueling your body, there's no way you can get through 8-hour rehearsal days and, you know, 3-hour ballets in the evening when you're performing. What I have to say about your wife is that it's possible to work out and to not build more muscle and to get cardio and not get bulky. And that's something that I had to learn just through trial and error. I thought, you know, if I want to be leaner, then I'm going to run on the elliptical and I'm going to have, you know, this high intensity. And it just didn't work for my body. And what I discovered was that, you know, swimming and doing things like Pilates that create longer, leaner muscles, as well as, you know, the diet that I now follow, and I don't mean it in those terms of I'm dieting, but just the life choice changes that I've made in terms of what I'm eating on a daily basis, leaner meats in the beginning before I cut out meats. But I think that when you really just think in terms of like healthy fats and lean fats and what's going to fuel your body, that goes a long way in terms of shaping your body and your muscle mass.
Ronnie, I really appreciate your call. Thanks for being there with it. Misty, what about the very idea of Ronnie's wife or other women who are muscular feeling like, oh, I'm too muscular?
Mm-hmm.
How do you think about that?
That's society. That's society that makes us feel that way. You know, that one image of a woman, you know, whatever that is at the moment in pop culture, is what we all need to look like in order to be or feel beautiful or be looked at as beauty in our societies. And I think it's horrible. I think that, you know, something that I'm celebrating in this book is owning and loving who you are now, that you know, and it's so difficult these days, especially for the youth, when we have so much access to social media and these images that are kind of being thrown at us throughout the day, you know, that this is what beauty is, this is what you should look like. And I just think that's so boring. You know, all of these women that look exactly the same through plastic surgery or whatever it is they're doing, I think that it's so beautiful that we're individuals and we're human and that we can be, you know, our best self and healthy and our own versions of what beauty is. And I think that's so much more special.
It's rare for us to have ballerinas here. We talked with Wendy Whalen a couple of years back, and that was really a lot of fun.
I love her.
Yeah, she was really great. It was really fun talking with her. I wish you would take us – I mean, we know the beauty – everybody knows the beauty of athleticism, of great athleticism, which, of course, you have. But there's a moment in ballet where you go from athleticism, even beautiful athleticism, to art.
Mm-hmm.
Could you take us into one of your roles or some dance? How do you think about that? When does it, you know, go from being a spectacular move to art? What makes that happen? Help us understand the inside of your mind as you create that.
As much as I say, you know, dancers are athletes, we're athletes, you know, it's so physical, there's not the athleticism without the art when it comes to ballet from day one.
Okay.
There's no separating the two. So it's not like we're in a gym and we're training and then we
bust
prepare
out the
to get
art
on stage.
Part.
Right. And then you bring in the character.
Yeah.
You know, it's all tied in together. And I think that's something that's so beautiful about the technique of ballet, that you're constantly thinking about those things, even when you're just training in class, from the way that you hold your head, it's expressing something and it's you're saying something from holding your arms a certain way or learning mime with your body. You're speaking a language through the athleticism. And for me at this point, at 34 years old, it's very straining on the body to do what we do day in and day out.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if I'm not completely invested in the character and I haven't done my research and really prepared and feel like I am her, whatever that character is, if Giselle, that's, you know, something I'm focusing on now, or Juliet, which is one of my favorite roles, it makes the technical things so much easier when you get out there and you allow the character and the story to carry you rather than just going out there and kind of physically pushing through these technical steps. It's almost like you're experiencing this outer body experience when you are just living as that character in the moment on the stage and just allowing the steps to become secondary and be a part of the vocabulary.
And the character is what's propelling you at that point.
Yes. Yeah. It's really difficult for me at this point to do really abstract works when you don't have a strong character attached to the movement, because I feel like that really drives me and brings me to another place.
Misty Copeland is with us, prima ballerina, principal dancer with the American Ballet Theater. She's out with a new book, Ballerina Body. We'll talk more about that. Behind us right here, Igor Stravinsky's Infernal Dance of Alcacer's Subjects from the ballet The Firebird, performed by the Philharmonia Orchestra. Misty took the leading role in The Firebird in New York in 2012, had to withdraw after one performance due to an injury. We'll talk about that. I'm Tom Ashbrook with Misty Copeland. This is On Point. We are talking this hour very happily with prima ballerina Misty Copeland about dance, muscles, her path, and the body and mindset she has honed for her art as now principal ballerina for the American Ballet Theater. She's out with a new book, Ballerina Body, Dancing and Eating Your Way to a Leaner, Stronger, and More Graceful You. Misty was the subject of a 2015 documentary, A Ballerina's Tale. It was directed by Nelson George. Film followed her as she recovered from a serious injury that threatened her career in ballet. And here's a clip where Dr. Martin O'Malley, Misty's orthopedic sports surgeon, describes her injury.
So the diagnosis is a mid-tibia stress fracture, which occurs very commonly in jumping athletes. So the tibia bone, which is on her the mid-shaft leg bone, it takes all the stress. And instead of breaking in half, it gets a tiny little break in the cortex surface or the outer surface of the bone. They're very slow healing.
Mid-tibia stress fracture, that can be a real threat to a ballerina's career. Here's a little more where Gilda Squire, Misty's manager, talks about the threat that that injury presented to her career.
I don't think anyone truly expected her to be able to come back from that. You know, you combine the extent of the injury with her age, the amount of wear and tear on the body. I think that they just sort of said 1 + 1 + 1 = 3, and you're not coming back. And if you do come back, you won't be able to come back and be where you won't be able to pick up where you left off.
Ah, but she came back. Misty, what was that like? I mean, was it terrifying? And were you confident that you would come back, or was it a toss-up?
It was such a critical moment in my career. I was 29 years old at the time, and I had been in the company for over a decade. I'd been a soloist for, I think, maybe 5 years at the time. In a ballerina's trajectory, if you're not promoted to principal dancer in your mid-20s,
yeah,
or not given an opportunity, it most likely isn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I was given the role of Firebird, and it was the first time I was given a principal role in a classical ballet, and it was like, okay, I'm 29 years old.
Yeah.
This is it. This is my last shot, my last opportunity to really prove myself and prove that I'm capable of being a principal dancer. During that process of learning the choreography, and it was months and months of working on this new creation that Alexei Ratmansky created for American Ballet Theatre of Firebird. It's a ton of jumping, the role, and you know, I wasn't taking the time that I needed to really rest and recover, which every athlete
mm-hmm.
needs.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just pushing, and I pushed through the pain and just, you know, ignored and didn't really say anything to any of the physical therapists at ABT, because I thought if I told them what I was
mm-hmm.
feeling, yeah, they'd pull me from the show and I'd never be given an opportunity again. So I pushed through two performances of The Firebird in Southern California, where we made the premiere. And then my very first show in New York City was my last show. There was just – it was too much pain. But I knew that if I accomplished a performance in New York City, that they would see that I am capable of mm-hmm. this. And later finding out that, you know, I had 6 stress fractures and 3 of them were almost full breaks. It was terrifying. And I was being told by several doctors before I met with Dr. Martin O'Malley that I would never dance again. I would need to have a rod put through my shin bone. And even if I did that, it would not really allow me to dance, you know, how I did before.
You know, one of the things you write about in Ballerina Body is it's not just about the body. It's about the mind. Mm-hmm. How did you find the strength of mind, the balance?
That was such a big part of that. Yeah. You know, something that I feel like I've developed before I really understood, you know, the strength I had as a child, I had such mental strength. And I think it was just coming from the environments that I was in and just trying to survive and not crumble. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it prepared me in a way for the ballet world that, you know, I didn't see as an asset at the time as a child. But, you know, you have to be able to push out so much negativity. And I think that any person can benefit from having, you know, this kind of mindset. It's not just about, you know, being on stage and being a performer, but being able to push aside the negativity, be present and in the moment and focused on what you're doing, having an end goal in sight. And for me, you know, I didn't think, you know, this is the end or the realistic possibilities of what, you know, my career could be. But I would wake up every morning and my goal was to get back on stage and to become a principal dancer. And there's just something in that space when you have that positive energy around you that I think allows you to heal quicker.
Could I ask you about race? You mentioned it right at the top that you saw the traditional complaints about body type as a kind of a, you know, you correct me if I'm wrong here, but as a kind of a cover for mm-hmm. a racial assessment. How have you seen that, or how did you see that come into play in your career, and has it changed?
I think, you know, growing up in Southern California in a very diverse community and coming into the ballet world and no one really acknowledging or talking to me about my skin color as a 13-year-old, you know, focusing on my training, it was just all thrust at me as a professional. And I was alone. I was in ABT for a decade, the only black woman. Mm-hmm. So I kind of, you know, the black dance community is so small. And when we find each other, we all have the same stories. And it's so fascinating that it doesn't matter who you're talking to. We've all been told the same thing. And I think hearing over and over and over again from African-American dancers, especially women, you know, your feet are too flat, or all black people have flat feet. That's the stereotype. Mm-hmm. All black people are too muscular. You should do modern dance. You'd have a more successful career there. And, you know, I'm looking at a lot of these dancers and you know, if their skin color was white, they would look like a ballet dancer. And you know, it just took me, again, you know, just deciphering those words and just figuring out that, like, this is their way of not letting us in. And it's acceptable language to just mm-hmm. say you don't have the right body because it's such an, you know, aesthetic driven yeah. art form.
Did you take inspiration in those years from other black female athletes? I don't know, Venus, Serena Williams, or others?
Definitely nowadays I do. You know, just the conversation around race and body image with Serena, especially.
I mean, tennis was so white as well for
exactly.
a long, long time.
And there's so, you know, there's so much I think that we have in common in terms of dealing with those things. I you know, in ballet, everything is so hidden under the table. And so it's been really interesting and crazy to witness what Serena experiences verbally, outwardly, you know, yelled at her, written about her. It's awful, but it's so much a part of what black women have dealt with for forever in terms of just given we have such a negative attachment and image of what we should look like and everything that black women are is thought of as wrong or too, you know, it's too overly sexualized and you can't be this. But I think the amazing thing about tennis is that there's no, you know, kind of, oh, well, maybe she's the best or maybe she's not. It's like she's winning. She's the best. And it doesn't matter what package she's in. It's a little different in an art form where people can just say like, oh, well, she's just not my cup of tea. And so therefore you're not, you know.
You might envy that sometimes. She can come out with a score that proves that she won. You have
absolutely.
To persuade a critic.
it's a little more difficult. But, you know, and being in this art form and understanding that it's subjective and you know, even me as a dancer, you can look at people and they may be looked at as, you know, the most liked dancer or something, and you may not be for you. And that's something that we just have to accept as artists.
Could we go a little broader for a second on race and where you see our country moving right now or in the last year? We've had big political developments and a kind of a new texture to the discourse, a very polite way of saying there's been some pretty rude and rough stuff out there. After a period where, I mean, you remember, of course, like we all do, when Barack Obama was elected president, and there was a lot of thought that about breakthrough and people embracing the diverse inevitability of this country. Where do you see this country and race now, Misty?
I think that these little, you know, maybe it's not a little step. I mean, having a, you know, African American president is a huge step. But I think that these things are, you know, we're going to see in time. And I think of we're going to see change in time. I think to have, you know, a whole group of youth that grew up seeing a black man as their president, it's completely changing their mindset as to what's possible. And I think the same thing with seeing a black ballerina on the stage, there's just something that's happening psychologically that's giving the youth power that I don't think that we have always had to even pursue going into these fields and pushing through beyond, you know, being told we're not capable because of the color of our skin.
Does that survive a period in which these sort of white nationalist messages have had a lot more prominence?
We've, as black people, we've survived a lot worse. And, you know, 200 years of slavery and we're still standing and strong and we had a black president. And so I think that we are going to keep pushing forward, and I think that, you know, these alt-right people have been given a platform to speak. I don't think that they were just birthed yesterday. They've existed, and we haven't heard them. I think that I'm hopeful that this is something that will pass, and, you know, especially in terms of the arts, I think that we bring people together. That's what we do. And even with, you know, arts programs and things being cut, I think that we have so much power as individuals and organizations to be able to continue to raise awareness. And, you know, I would love to start my own foundation and just be a part of carrying on the necessity of art in children's lives.
Last year, you and then-President Obama sat down for an interview with Essence and Time magazine to talk about your roles as leaders in the black community. And here's a little bit from the president praising your role as a trailblazer in ballet.
As the father of two daughters, one of the things I'm always looking for are strong women who are out there who are breaking barriers and doing great stuff. And you know, Misty's a great example of that.
Hard to argue with that. Misty Copeland is with us. Her new book is Ballerina Body. Kevin is calling from Atlanta. Kevin, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi. It's such an honor to be able to talk in this format. I think Barack Obama stole some of my thunder being an African American father with two young daughters, 15 and 11, that are artists in their own right. Not dancers, but I'm really just proud and very enthused and want to show my admiration to you because you do motivate and, you know, just to hear the struggle that you went through early on in your life, just today speaking over the radio, I thought maybe that your book wasn't a actual something that might be interested interesting for my daughters, but I think that I will look at that because I think it will translate and let people know, particularly my daughters who are avid readers, that they don't need to give up and be just have a positive role model to show that we just have to just keep going on even when we have these challenges. So I really appreciate and wanted to thank you for it. I do follow you on Instagram. I love Misty on Point. It means so many different things. I think that's great.
Thank you. I'm glad that you changed your mind about the book. It's been difficult. You know, I think that, again, you know, having that stereotype of dancers and, you know, I've even before the book came out, I saw a lot of comments and things on social media that were like, well, you're a ballerina. What do you know about health and food? And, and you know, this book, I feel it's come from, you know, 20 years of trial and error and figuring out what works for me. And I'm lending my experiences and, you know, the knowledge that I have thus far of being a professional athlete, but how you can apply that as an ordinary person who's not, you know, maybe extremely physically active, who's never danced. Like this isn't for professional dancers. It's about learning how to find balance in your life. And I think that the ballet structure is so beautiful that I've used that in my life to help me get to where I am, and that's such a big part of the framework of the book.
Kevin, I really appreciate your call from Atlanta, and good luck to your two daughters. Laura writes to us, Misty, on Facebook, says, thank you to you. Thank you for your strength to not listen to anyone that said you don't have the right body type. You embody power and beauty. Then she asks, she says, are you mentoring the next generation of ballerinas, and how do you see ballet in the future and how it should evolve, Misty?
Mm-hmm. It's something, the mentoring is something that happened really organically from a young age, you know, as a young professional. And I think, again, that's supported by the structure and the tradition of classical dance. So much of what we do on the daily is we're coached by former dancers. When we are learning a new ballet, someone comes in to set the ballet who's done it before in the past or who's worked with the original choreographer. So I feel like it's just kind of built into what we experience, you know, lending information, giving back. And so, yes, I've been mentoring for a long time, and I have a handful of young people that are really, you know, close to me and a part of my life that I've watched grow. And the future of dance, I think, is it's in our youth. And I think that we have the ability to make change now that we're going to see, you know, maybe a decade from now, more diversity.
Diversity in the dance itself. We've just got a couple of seconds. Will we still be going to Swan Lake in 100 years?
Yes. I think that when you have these ballets that are just staples and I absolutely love them, I think they will forever be a part of ballet, but we will continue to grow the repertoire.
Misty Copeland, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you.
We wish you well, and take care of that ballerina body, and thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Take care of that wonderful mind as well. Misty Copeland's new book is Ballerina Body, Dancing and Eating Your Way to a Leaner, Stronger, and More Graceful You. Misty Copeland, in New York, our great thanks to you for being with us. Listeners, you can continue this conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.